good to be back at the Council on Foreign Relations. As Pete mentioned, I've been a member for a long time and was actually a director for some period of time. I never mentioned that when I was campaigning for re-election back home in Wyoming.
And I am delighted to be here in these new headquarters. I have been often to, the mothership in New York City. But it's good to have an outpost of the council right here down the street from the State Department. We get a lot of advice from the council, so this will mean I won't have as far to go to be told what we should be doing and how we should think about the future.
World government is the structure necessary for global justice.
First, we Americans are going to have to yield up some of our sovereignty. That's going to be, to many, a bitter pill. Pat Robertson has written in a book a few years ago that we should have a world government, but only when the Messiah arrives. He wrote, and literally, any attempt to achieve world order before that time must be the work of the devil. Well, join me. I'm glad to sit here at the right hand of Satan.
Welcome back to another edition of the Prepper Recon Podcast. We're going to fight them off. A United Nations Army couldn't hold us back. While you're at PrepperRecon.com, stop by the Prepper Recon Supply Store. We've got a great selection of Molly compression packs, hydration kits, and our new concealed carry tactical slings. All the packs and slings come with your choice of patch to let liberals know how you feel. We have some very cool Moulin Lay patches, come and take it patches, sheepdog, zombie response team, and matching U.S. flag patches. Of course, we still have our fully stocked Molly-compatible individual first aid kits as well. Just click the store tab at the top of the PrepperRecon.com homepage.
Whether your plan is to bug out or bug in, CampingSurvival.com has all of your preparedness needs, including fish antibiotics, long-term storage food, water filters, bug-out bags, and first aid kits. Use coupon code PrepperRecon for 5% off your entire order at CampingSurvival.com.
Today's guest is Glenn Tate. For our new listeners, Glenn is an author, lawyer, patriot, gunfighter, rabble-rouser, and all-around good guy. You might say he's the modern Renaissance man. Glenn, welcome back on the show.
Thank you, Mark. That was perhaps the most flattering intro ever. And let's just shut the show down right now because it's only going to go downhill. My self-esteem is going to go down after that introduction. So it's all about my self-esteem.
All right. Well, thanks for coming back on the show. And
all right, it was nice talking to you, Mark.
Tell the folks where they can find you.
Oh, what the heck? Let's do a cool interview.
Okay, let's do it. Now, 299 Days is out in audiobook, and I hear it's doing pretty good. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, it's amazing. It was released October 26th, the 299th day of the year, which is pretty cool. And by the way, the idea for releasing 299 Days on the 299th day was our mutual friend and narrator, Kevin Pierce, who's a pretty bright guy, and I thought that was pretty clever. Anyway, it came out on October 26th, and the first week it was out, it was number one in the genre of sci-fi. By the way, footnote on that, I think science fiction is kind of a weird category for books about things that have already happened and are happening, I guess because some of the events... kind of like in your book, some of the events take place in the future, so I think that's why they probably put it in the sci-fi category. But anyway, so that was great. I don't know where it's ranking now as we speak in mid-November. I really don't care. I mean, I don't keep track of that stuff because it's kind of annoying. It was just very cool that the week it launched, it was number one. I give a ton of credit, by the way, to Kevin Pierce, who narrated your books too and is absolutely magnificent. We've had a long conversation, kind of the Kevin Pierce, you know, mutual admiration society. So I won't go into that and bore people with it, but the narration is spectacular, just like they are. It is in your books.
Yeah, Kevin, he's fantastic. He really, really is. And now it's all 10 of them are out in audio now. Is that right?
That's right. Yep. All 10 are out. They were launched all 10 on the same day. And it was the same day that book 10 came out on paperback and Kindle. So book 10 is the last one in the series. And so it wrapped up with people who like Kindle, paper, and audiobook all getting it at the same time, which was very, very cool. And I'm really, really happy with how Book 10 turned out on a variety of levels. It was a nice, I think, ending, and in some ways planting seeds for future stuff, which I don't plan on doing any future stuff, but it'll get people thinking. And the neat thing about Book 10 is that you don't have to read the first 9 books to understand what's going on. Book 10 is really a standalone single book if you wanted to just read one book. It's a collection of 43 chapters. Each chapter is about a person who was made an honorary colonel by the new Washington state legislature after there's a change of management in the state. Let me put it kind of euphemistically and softly like that. And so each chapter describes what one of these people did to receive this honorary colonelship. It's not all military stuff. And in fact, that's one of the things I'm the proudest about this. I mean, it's about a guy who does some money laundering to help the good guys, people who make, you know, fake IDs, a nurse who sets up a hospital who treats everybody regardless of their side, and all kinds of other aspects that you would need, people doing different things to make it through a collapse and to restore a society and get it up and running again in a constitutional liberty-focused way. And so I don't know that anyone's ever written about, you know, the nerd computer guy who reroutes all the supplies away from the bad guys and routes them to the good guys, stuff like that. I mean, it's kind of nerdy in a sense, but when you think about it, it's really, really important, and it's how wars are won, wars like this. So, yeah, but and the other neat thing is, I know this is important to you, and it's important to me. There's no swearing in Book 10. In the first 9 books, there's a little bit of it, because when your friend gets shot, most people don't yell out, gee willikers. And so I was being realistic in the first 9 books. But since Book 10 is a series of speeches and stories that are being told to a joint session of a legislative body, most people don't swear when they're speaking to legislative bodies, so there's no swearing in Book 10. So if you want a one-book sample series of short stories that are all woven together with a single theme, Book 10 might be the way to go. And then if you want to read the other 9, you can do it if you want to. But that's one of the reasons Book 10, I think, is doing so well, is that it is that standalone single volume if you want it.
Yeah, nobody swears in legislative sessions or if they're politicians on TV except Joe Biden.
Yeah. He doesn't even know he's swearing. He's functionally illiterate.
So yeah, I think that's probably what it is. Now, we've got a ton of new listeners since the last time you were on the show. So could you just give them a real quick synopsis of what 299 Days is all about? What's the first book about? And just walk us through a little bit of what's going on there.
Yeah, the first book is about preparing for a collapse, and it's autobiographical. It's about me, a guy who grew up with some hillbilly skills, grew up poor in a rural area, and decided to go to college and be, quote, successful, and then ended up being a suburban slug and dependent on everything, and has a change of heart and has resistance at home. My wife in the story and at the time was thinking I was insane. And so there's a lot of I don't know of any book that has ever looked into the spousal strife that can come about from preparing, which affects a lot of people. Sounds like you're very fortunate and don't have that problem, but it is a problem for quite a few of us. And so that's book one, and you start, you know, being introduced to some of these characters. Book two, the collapse hits. It's a partial collapse, economic collapse, with some political overtones. I have a job I get to observe government is probably the best way to put it. And I live and work in the state capital of Washington State, which is Olympia. And so you get a lot of insight into things I've seen and heard, and quite honestly, some of the things that my friends have told me about. Some of this is secondhand. And you find out how a collapse would play out, economically, but also with the political reactions that would happen. Book three is out at my cabin area where a bunch of us go out and form up a community in books three and four. In book five, a special forces guy comes out to form up a guerrilla unit. The good guys are starting to think about fighting the bad guys. Books six, seven, and eight are how the community plays out, how the community comes together in a very liberty and constitutional way, liberty-minded and constitutional way. It's really a description of how to, number one, form a community, but number two, form it the right way and be decent and constitutional. And it's been described as a little bit of a field manual. Of course, you don't really know that it's a field manual because it doesn't read like one. It's just descriptions of how people act and react to things. Book eight, the guerrilla unit heads out and starts the battle. And in book nine, the battle takes place. And then book 10, as I mentioned, was the 43 colonels. So there's about 3,800 pages and about 90 hours of audio compressed into about 2 minutes and 46 seconds. So pardon me if I left some stuff out.
that was a really good method of boiling it down there, though, for us. Now, Christmas is right around the corner. Do you think Prepper Fiction makes a good Christmas gift?
Yes, and I'm terribly biased, and so are you, but it absolutely does on a variety of levels. Number one, it's good, clean entertainment and fun, and you can lose yourself, and it's just, you know, it's a good thing to do. Number two, it's informative. And number three, your books, and I think my books fit in this category, you can persuade people with this. In my books, in particular with a reluctant spouse scenario, if you have a reluctant spouse, you might want to read, you know, 299 Days, at least the first few books, and see if it's something that your wife or, in some cases, husband might be receptive to, because not only is that conflict between spouses in there, and I think it gets resolved a pretty decent way, you know, that you could then present this to your reluctant spouse, and he or she could be persuaded. But the other thing is, the scenario is rational. There's no zombies. There's no gigantic conspiracy. You know, racial stuff. And so it's a very rational, I think, believable build up to what happens and why it happens. And so there's some credibility there. I mean, if you want to convince someone to be a prepper or to at least accept you as a prepper, right, you don't want to start off with a story about, you know, mutants and stuff that's just not believable. So I think it's a good persuasive piece in that sense. And you know, it's something that if people enjoy it, they can keep getting the other books, much like your series. And, you know, that's kind of neat to get somebody started on something they really like. So, yeah, I think Christmas, and, of course, I don't call it the holidays. I'm a Christian, so it's Christmas. If you celebrate another holiday, that's cool, too. But, I mean, you'll never offend me calling it Christmas. So it's a good Christmas present, yeah.
And I think it's easier sometimes to tell people how to prep than it is to wake them up to the need to prep. And that's a lot of sort of what you went through with your wife, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly right. I tried very initially and very unsuccessfully to lay out the case. I'm a lawyer. That's what I do, right? Lay out the case for why this was important. I remember in July of 2008, I forwarded her an email from an economist who I respected and had a track record. By the way, I'm not interested in drama and crazy freak out fire drills. You know, people have track records. That's what I look at. And this economist did. And again, in July of 2008, this economist said that in the fall of 2008, he thought that there would be a severe economic situation. There would be a credit and liquidity freeze and that some major, investment banks would go under, at least one of them would, which is exactly what happened in September of 2008. So I thought, hey, I've got some credibility here. And the reaction I got was, why are you just worrying about stuff? You're weird. This is crazy. This isn't going to happen. And of course, after it happened, I had the good sense not to say, I told you so. My wife in real life is a doctor, and the whole thing about doctors' personalities, is pretty much true. They're often the smartest person in the room, and, you know, they kind of carry that out even when they come home. Sorry, dear, I love you. But anyway, it is true. So I could tell her that. So, yeah, there's that aspect of it.
And who was the economist?
I cannot recall his name. I knew you were going to ask me that. And
I want to say
UBS or a Credit Suisse or something like that. I don't remember his name. If you said it, I would recognize it. I apologize.
Well, now there's John Rubino. He called the housing bubble, and so did Peter Schiff. There was a few people that actually got that right. When we hear the folks from the Fed barking that nobody saw that coming, there were several people that saw it coming.
Well, not only did some alternative economists that, like you mentioned, see it coming, the Fed kept saying nothing is bad and nothing is happening and, oh, it's just subprime and it's going to be contained and all that other stuff they were saying in late 2007 and 2008. So not only did the Fed not see it coming, well, they probably did, but they just didn't want to admit it. They actively went on record and said things that were demonstrably false. So, of course, they have no credibility with us.
No, Bernanke said he told Maria Bartiromo that there had never been a housing bubble, and there's the premise of having a housing bubble was basically preposterous. And then when it became obvious that we were having a collapse in home values, he said he was sure that it would be contained to the subprime market, which worked out wonderfully.
Exactly.
And now we just had another round of elections. Nationally, the Republicans gained some ground, which may be better than the alternative, but we still have some folks in there who've worn out their welcome, even on that side of the aisle. I'm originally from Kentucky, and their Senate race had no good choices. They had Grimes, who was an Obamacare supporter, and Mitch McConnell, who signed off on the 2012 National Defense Authorization Act, and he called the Patriot Act one of the most important and overdue pieces of legislation in a generation. And he said that perhaps it didn't go far enough. Is this the politicians' fault, or is it we the people who keep electing them?
I'm so glad you asked it, and you asked it that way. I'm a firm believer that the general population and the voting population in particular are to blame, and that's something that's kind of unpopular. If I were in retail politics, I would never get up in front of a crowd and say, hey, everybody in the audience, you know, you're terrible and you're the root of this problem. But I firmly believe it. I work around politicians, and I've been in the room when decisions are made, and they truly do react to whatever they think is going to get them, you know, elected, or usually reelected is the big prize. They seem to really go out of their way to have these jobs that they complain they're not paid very well for, but they all end up being millionaires a couple of years after getting into Congress. But anyway, it is the voters, and I come from a state, I'm in Washington State, which is just off the charts left-wing badness. And so maybe what I'm going to say is more true and more harsh for my state. It may not apply in other states that have a pretty decent voting population, but the people here get what they deserve when it comes to the ridiculous policies that come out. There is no functional Republican Party in my state, for example. And so I can't even blame Republicans in my state because they really can't do anything. But nationally speaking, more people want free stuff by far than want liberty. And this was really apparent to me in the 2012 presidential election with all the things that you could fault and can and should fault President Obama for, and that were well known, for the population to reelect that guy, that I think was absolute crystal clear proof that most people out there voting, at least in presidential elections, and it's a much different group of people voting in presidential elections than midterm elections, people voting in presidential elections, by and large, really do want free stuff, and it's pretty much that simple. So I absolutely blame the voters. It's too easy to just blame the politicians. You know, it's so convenient to say, well, there's a few hundred people in Congress who are the problem. Well, there's 310 million people in this country, and about 200 million of them vote, and about 105 million of them are the problem, in my opinion. So, yeah, it is entirely the voters. Shame on us. We get what we deserve. We're about to live through this utopian dream society that some people want, and we're going to see how poorly it works out. And I hate to even talk like this. I'm not a vengeful person. I don't have that neener, neener, you disagree with me, so I hope bad things happen to you. That's not my personality, but especially after the 2012 presidential election, that's where I've come. And as far as the parties go, I'm like you. I'm so past the parties. The Republicans do plenty of bad stuff, and it's even worse for Republicans to do bad stuff. You mentioned Mitch McConnell and the Patriot Act and NDAA, because theoretically Republicans know better, and that's even more disheartening. I get why Democrats will go and do bad things to get votes and, you know, grant amnesty to illegal aliens to get millions of votes. All that makes sense to me, and I almost can't fault them because it's rational, at least from their viewpoint. But Republicans, you know, can do better but aren't, and so they're going to get lumped into the same category as Democrats, I think, by a lot of people. And we're seeing that in polling, too.
Yeah, I consider myself, if you were talking about a pure Republican, somebody that's for limited government and state sovereignty and those types of things, I consider myself a Republican. I just think that that party has been completely hijacked. I don't necessarily think that we need. Of course, I had one of your friends, David Taylor, on right before the elections, and he said, you know, well, we need to do both things. We need to take the Republican Party back, and we need some other party so that we've got some competition in politics. And he said we kind of need all of that, and I think I kind of agree with him on that. Now, Jimmy, my old intern, he has a cousin in Washington State, and his cousin voted for I-594 because he thought it was a new freeway that would get people from Olympia to Seattle faster.
Oh my goodness! Oh, initiative I-594 was supposedly to require background checks for gun sales, so, you know, close the so-called gun show loophole and just require everybody to go through a background check, which doesn't sound crazy to a lot of people. It's terrible public policy, and I'm opposed to it and all that other stuff. But to average people, it didn't sound terrible. There's all kinds of bad things that are loaded into that initiative. If you transfer a firearm, which includes basically loaning it to somebody, you know, for a week for them to work on it, you know, your friend's a gunsmith and you drop it off at his place, well, that's a quote transfer. It's not the, you know, criminals in the parking lot trading a handgun for a bunch of drugs. I mean, that's kind of the image that the campaign put out. Two things happened that were really bad for actually passing this thing. I mean, they ended up passing it. They were bad from my perspective, but two unfortunate things happened. The most unfortunate thing was right before people voted, and in Washington State, people vote by mail over about a 3 or 4 week period, and so there's one particular weekend before the elections in which most people, statistically speaking, mail in their ballots. Well, the Friday before that big voting weekend in Marysville, a student went crazy and killed a bunch of people, a bunch of fellow students, and then himself with a gun. And so it was very emotional, and he was all over the news pretty much at the worst time voting-wise for it to happen. Obviously, it's bad that it happened. I don't mean to be political about this, but, I mean, there was an undeniable political effect. The other thing that was unfortunate was that Mayor Bloomberg and his anti-gun friends spent, I think the figure I saw was $9 million. $9 million in a state initiative. In California, that's kind of standard fare, but in Washington State, $9 million sets records. And so you could not, in October and November, you could not, in September, you could not be near a television set for more than a few minutes and not see an ad. So it was the perfect storm of a tragedy and in ridiculous amounts of campaign funds. And so the thing passed. And now we've got a really terrible law in Washington State that's going to cause some problems. A lot of people are going to blatantly violate this law, and it's going to create a problem for the law enforcement and political people because they can't prosecute everybody. So it'll be very interesting. And in the past, I had always said, hey, Washington State is full of a bunch of whack jobs, but at least we have good gun laws. I can no longer say that. So it was it was a big blow, and it's going to hurt.
Well, I think some law enforcement officers are going to have to make a choice on whether they're going to comply with that law or if they're going to uphold their oath to support the constitutions of America and Washington State, aren't they?
Yeah, and that's one thing I haven't done. I need to do is I have friends in the law enforcement community at the state and local level, and I need to talk to them and ask them what the word is within their department about whether they're going to, you know, go out of their way to enforce this. I suspect they won't. I suspect it'll be lower than jaywalking tickets. But, you know, one place this will be a problem is child custody things and nasty divorces. And that's when people can call the police and say somebody borrowed a gun for a week. And it's a, you know, it's a gross misdemeanor, your first offense for this, which is kind of a serious thing. So, yeah, even if the police don't actively enforce it, there's still going to be a lot of people who are hurt by this ridiculous and unconstitutional law that isn't going to do anything for the real, obviously the real bad guys. I mean, you can't write a law that says it's illegal to trade drugs for a gun because it already is illegal. So they didn't put that in the initiative.
It's time for a quick break, and we'll be right back. The dollar's lost over 90% of its purchasing power since 1971. Silver, on the other hand, has proved to be a very stable form of wealth preservation over the years. And where do you buy silver? Silver.com, of course. Silver.com offers fantastic prices on silver and gold. Check out silver.com today.
And now 299 days gets into some of the nuts and bolts of the politics that are likely to trigger collapse. Do you think that's a useful tool to getting people motivated to start getting informed about political issues?
Yeah, I think so. Anecdotally speaking, a couple of people that I've talked to, friends of mine, who are not really into politics, but they're gun people, and I guess they voted. I never even asked, but they were kind of surprised. They're like, what's this? What do you mean? What do you mean when I'm hunting, I can't hand a rifle to somebody and have them take a shot, and because that's a quote transfer. And but they're shocked because gun law wise, we've had it pretty good in this state, and now they're realizing that we are one initiative, $9 million, and a tragedy away from, you know, what's next? A magazine, a ban, you know, standard capacity magazines being banned. Who knows what else could be coming? And in the 2015 legislative session that starting in January, I think that the Democrats and the squishy Republicans in the state legislature will be emboldened to pass more gun control because they think that the, you know, the people want it. Again, back to the people being, you know, the root of this problem and the politicians just reacting. I can really see that happening. So yeah, there's some guys who have never really been interested in politics who are pretty fired up now and are getting the fact that there are evil, stupid people in Seattle who want to take their guns away from them. And I'm glad that they're seeing what I see, you know, all the time. I mean, I talk to these people, these liberal whack jobs. I mean, I kind of have to. And I know what they're like, and I know their thinking, and that thinking is illustrated repeatedly in 299 days, especially in the first few books. And it's for real. I mean, the conversation in the books about tax money, that's our money. This is the government saying this, our money. I mean, we need that money. I mean, it's for us. It's for government. These people, they don't need to keep their own money. I mean, it's our money. I mean, that's for real stuff. And that's how they think. And so more people are realizing it with the guns being the lightning rod for that.
And now, as I mentioned, we do have a lot of new listeners, and you have to assume that a lot of those are probably new preppers that are maybe just now starting to wake up to the need to get prepared. People are going to get you some kind of junk for Christmas anyway. What are some good suggestions that you could make to those new preppers that they could ask for Christmas? So instead of getting socks or another tie or yogurt machine or whatever, they can ask for something that's useful.
Yeah, well, you mentioned the word junk, and I think junk silver would be a good thing. Silver, I guess gold is kind of, you know, I don't know, it's a little bit expensive. I mean,
you can have a rich uncle to be asking for that.
Yeah, exactly. I think silver is a great thing to ask for. Junk silver, also maybe some coins, U.S. minted coins or something like that. Boy, what are some other good things?
A good water filter?
Yeah, exactly. You can get Birchie water filters. They're $300-$400. Maybe that's not in everybody's budget. A Life Straw, that's $20 on Amazon. And it's basically this amazing filtration thing that's truly saved thousands and thousands of lives, especially in the third world, where it's a big kind of straw, basically, and you just put it in some water and you drink out of it, and it filters it, filters all the bad stuff out. It's very compact. I mean, it's about the size of one of those big, remember those big pencils, you know, the kind of that big fat pencil, but
yeah.
It's like a foot long, and it's $20. I think that's a great thing. Water is something people always overlook. I mean, I love guns a lot, and I always think of guns and all that other stuff and communication stuff and kind of the glitzy stuff, but water is really, really important. So, yeah, Life Straw would be something that's good.
Katadyn makes a good hand pump filter, and they're about $79, which is, you know, sort of in between the Berkey and the Life Straw.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, something in the middle. Because, yeah, I think just one Life Straw would probably be a little bit grueling, you know, just to have one of those. But the hand pump is good. And then books, not our books, but, I mean, reference books, homesteading books, books about first aid and all that. Your IFAX, I think, would be individual first aid kit, would be a good gift. But you can start small. That's one of the things that people ask me a lot. They say, I'm really overwhelmed. Where do I start? And my first point is, don't be overwhelmed. Just start.
And
those are some ways to do it.
And the goal is to be a little bit more prepared tomorrow than you were today. It's not to go from having nothing to all of a sudden a week from now you got to be ready for the zombie apocalypse.
Exactly. I look at it this way, and this is my own story, I guess. It took me decades to slide into suburban slothful dependency. If it only takes me a couple years to become somewhat self-reliant and self-sufficient, that's pretty good. But you need to look at it in terms of a few years. But it's a few years of one day at a time, and there's no other way to do it. I mean, unless you've got $1 million lying around and you just go and buy $10,000 worth of freeze-dried food tomorrow, that's not very practical for most people. So it needs to be slow and, you know, put some planning into it, but go with the most important things first, like we were saying, water.
Yeah, and then Christmas is a good time to upgrade stuff too. If when you were throwing together your bug out bag, if you said, "Oh, I got to do this on $150," and you got a cheap multi tool and you got a cheap Walmart flashlight, you know, this might be a good time to upgrade to a little bit better flashlight or maybe to get a good quality Leatherman for a multi tool or something like that as well.
Yeah, exactly. Because this is one of the few times where quality is really going to matter, because this, by definition, a bug out bag, this is your life is depending on it. And so that's one of the few times you can skimp on other stuff, but not literally life saving material.
And then, on the other side, I guess we should focus on the giving, because it's always better to give than to receive, right? That's what we've always been told. So, now giving's just as important. And most of the people listening to this show are preppers by this point, at some state of the game. Those folks can think about giving away something that's going to be useful other than socks or a hair dryer or what have you. Last year, all my nieces and nephews got silver. So just like what you were just talking about, I gave them all a 1 ounce silver eagle last year to sort of get them started on that, start thinking about the value of it. And this year, I'm doing exactly what you just said. Everybody's getting an IFAC from the Prepper Recon store, which has got an IBD in there and quick clot and a suture kit and EMT shares and a nice variety of gauzes and bandages and things like that. And those are all Molly compatible. And then also 299 Days book series. That's a great Christmas gift right there to give to somebody. And I think that one of the good things about Prepper Fiction, if you want to give that for a Christmas gift, is that it doesn't necessarily have to challenge your belief system. If for somebody like your wife, you know, to go to her and say, listen, the world's going to fall apart next week. We have to drastically change our shopping habits and our spending habits and everything about our life because everything's getting ready to change. It was very difficult for her, probably partly because that was so ingrained in her belief system that tomorrow's going to be just like it was today. And to introduce that through fiction, it's not quite so challenging. And it sort of gives them little tidbits that they can digest. And if it's too frightening for them, they can step away and just say, oh, well, this is just fiction, so I don't have to be freaked out. But if they want to start exploring and start thinking about it, it sort of gives their mind a path to do that, doesn't it?
Exactly. And then when they start looking at headlines and they start seeing things that happened in the book that was written 3 years ago, that is another thing that helps them say, wait a minute, this isn't crazy. And I can't stress enough that there's nothing irrational or spooky or weird or kooky about 299 days. And that was very, very intentional. I persuade people for a living. That's what I do. And especially when it comes to large groups trying to persuade them to do the right thing. And so I went into the writing of this book thinking, how am I going to persuade people to believe that they need to prepare and then to describe to them how to prepare and entertain and tell a story and describe, and I shouldn't downplay the story part. When I describe the war and good guys taking over, you know, I think all that's going to happen. And so it's not just some whimsical comic book thing. It is something that I hope doesn't happen. I would love to be wrong about that. But it's more than just a story. But, yes, it is a great way to fiction. I mean, I've done that where I've said, you know, well, just fiction. And so it takes the edge off of a pretty serious set of topics that really challenge people's entire worldview and everything they've ever known.
And while we hope that it never happens, I think when we look at it from a mathematical perspective, it's pretty much baked into the cake at this point. Some type of economic failure of our currency and all the bad stuff that goes along with that, wouldn't you say?
Oh, absolutely. The only question is when, and I'm sure you get that question a lot too. I don't know what your answer is. I'd be curious to know, but
February 32nd.
Okay, February 32nd. Excellent. But I'm going to use that line. That was pretty good. I have no idea when this is going to happen, and I quit trying. I think it should have happened by now. So I've been wrong consistently about the when part. And so, you know, take that into account. And so I quit. But it's going to happen. I think it's going to happen when, obviously, God is ready for it to happen, and he's got a lot of work that he's getting done through us. He's making sure people that need to be prepared are prepared. And obviously he already knows what's going to happen. He invented time. So, you know, it'll happen whenever he wants it to happen. But it, and you're right, mathematically cannot continue even remotely. We've seen things this week, even, that the dollar is weakening. My goodness, the Canadians are now going to trade in yuan instead of dollars. And, all kinds of crazy things going on. I mean, I don't think there's been a week in the past year or so in which there hasn't been at least some bad news for the U.S. dollar retaining its world reserve currency status. And things have just been, the pace has been quickening in the past few days and weeks. And so there's just no way, for example, Canada is going to start trading in Chinese currency instead of U.S. dollars when they buy and sell things internationally. They're not doing that for no reason. I mean, they obviously have a purpose behind doing that. Canada's our biggest and best ally / trading partner. Maybe China's a bigger trading partner, but Canada's right up there. And for them to do that, they know something's up. And I don't mean that in a conspiratorial way. They know that the reign of the U.S. dollar is done. And they're making plans. They should. They need to, you know, do what's in their best interest. That's what countries do.
And you mentioned that the final book, book 10, sort of leaves the door open in case you do want to write another book, but there's not necessarily any plans for that right now. For number one, I don't think that you're going to be able to write 10 books and then just suddenly quit writing. And then on the other side of that, I think that the fans are they're going to demand that there be more books. And I mean, you've seen what's happened in Ferguson. At some level, sometimes you just got to give the people what they want.
Yeah, you're right. I think that's a really persuasive argument, Mark. as far as more books go, I do not currently feel like I have a message that needs to get out. I most certainly did feel that way with the first 10 books. I mean, I could not stop writing these things. I would get up at 3-4 in the morning. The record was 1:51 a.m. I would just spring out of bed completely awake and start writing for hours and hours and hours because I had a message to get out. And I could tell there were all these, quote, coincidences going on that weren't really coincidences that absolutely impelled me to write like I was. And so I guess what I'm saying is when I'm being inspired by God, I know it, and I felt it, and it's unmistakable. It's a great feeling, by the way. And that's not going on right now. If there is a really good reason to write more, I certainly will. But what I'm not going to do is write stuff just because, you know, it'll sell books. I hate it. I hate it when that happens, and I don't want to do it. And so, but you see, the crazy thing is, in a split second, I can all of a sudden get some inspiration and write some stuff, and maybe there will be more. I just don't want to mislead people and let them think that there is more, but doors are open, certainly. And if God wants me to write some more, I'm more than willing to do it because the greatest honor in the universe.
And you sort of strike me as a serial learner as well, and it's just and I'm thinking that anybody that sort of has that appetite for knowledge like you have, I think that, you know, a year from now you're probably going to have something else that you're wanting to share or that God's putting on your heart to help get the message out. So all the folks out there that are disappointed or thinking that you're not going to get a book 11, I'd just say remain hopeful because I think there'll be something.
Well, thank you. Yeah. Nonfiction is a possibility. And there's a lot of stuff. You mentioned Serial Learner. Yes, you're exactly right. I've learned so much stuff, and the team is real. For those who have read the book and know who the team is, they're real guys, untrained civilian goofballs, regular guys who have amazing skills, and we have this amazing relationship and chemistry and all that, and all that in the book's real. In fact, it's a little understated in the book, if you can believe that. And so it would be really neat to do a nonfiction book about, you know, how to do a lot of these things how to get a prepper group together and all of that other stuff. The problem is it couldn't be a book about how to do what we did because I don't think it'll ever come together again where you get these just amazing people that click so well. But there's still a lot of information that can get out in a non-fiction sense, and that would be cool too, because so the message gets out, people know they need to prep, and there's plenty of information in the 299-day series, but maybe I'm supposed to provide even more information in a pure informational setting, and if so, you know, God has my email address, right? He knows how to get a hold of me, and I love it when he does.
Awesome. Now, can you tell us about your website, Facebook page, and where folks can find you and purchase the books?
Yeah, the website is 299days.com, the numbers, 299days.com. Purchase, best way is to go on Amazon and just type in 299 Days or Glenn Tate, Glenn with one N, complete fake name. I protect my identity because of my job, and if people found out in my line of work, like my colleagues, what I was doing, oh my goodness, it would be bad news. But, and that's probably the best way. You can go on Audible for the audiobooks. You can also get the audiobooks on Amazon, but you can subscribe to Audible. It's a little bit cheaper if you want to get all 10 books to do a year-long subscription with Audible. And just Google. It's to the point now where just Google 299 days and a bunch of good stuff comes up. I'm a big fan of Facebook. I put out a lot of information almost daily, sometimes several times a day, and cool articles that people send me and cool pictures of readers and all kinds of uninteresting stuff. I try to put a little humor in it too, because this end of the world topic can get a little heavy sometimes, and I like to have some fun. So the Facebook page is 299 days parentheses the book. That's probably a great way to stay in touch. And also, if you're hearing this for the first time, you're like, what's this 299 days thing, and who's this Glenn Tate guy? And just go on the Facebook page and look around, and you'll see what kind of community is formed up around this. And you can see that it's a pretty good group of people that, you know, I'd like for you to be part of.
Glenn, thanks again for coming on the show.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Hey, Preppers and Patriots. I hope you all have a wonderful Thanksgiving. I pray that you'll take the day to be thankful for all that God has blessed you with this past year. We're seeing a troubling trend of stores opening on Thanksgiving Day. While I always encourage folks to be good stewards of their money and squirrel away as much as possible for a rainy day, there's plenty of other days to find good deals. When you shop, go to the movies, or engage in other economic activities on Thanksgiving, you're rewarding the stores for their decision to jerk employees away from their families on this one day out of the year that we need to reflect on our blessings. Neglecting to take time to acknowledge God and all He'd done for them was a big part of why God removed His hand of protection from the nation of Israel. As Americans, we need that protection now more than ever. I also personally refuse to get up at 4 a.m. on Black Friday for a doorbuster. Stores that run doorbuster often have their employees come in the night before, which cuts Thanksgiving short for them. Now, with that said, I will take advantage of Black Friday deals under normal store hours. It's a good opportunity to replace an out-of-date computer or replace electronic devices. And as I've said before, I'm all about frugality, just not at the expense of someone else's time to be thankful to God with their family. If I miss out on a few deals, so be it. I'll also miss out on the mob mentality, the stabbings over parking spaces, and getting trampled in doorbuster lines. And I'll let the stores know that this is one consumer that won't shop on Thanksgiving Day nor at 4 a.m. in the morning. The Friday after Thanksgiving, the Kindle edition of all my books will be on sale for 99 cents. The sale will run all weekend through Amazon's sale program, which will increase the price every 24 hours. So Saturday, the book will be $1.99. Sunday, it'll be $2.99, and then it'll be back to the full price on Monday. So take advantage of that. In addition to that sale, if you order any assault pack, tactical sling, or individual first aid kit, you can get a free PDF copy of The Days of Noah, Book 1 Conspiracy, from now through Christmas. Just type Noah PDF and the instructions to seller box at checkout. God bless and have a wonderful Thanksgiving.
Are we living in a time of which there is more prophetic writings than of any period in history? Noah Parker, like many in the United States, has been asleep at the wheel. During his complacency, the founding precepts of America have been slowly, systematically destroyed by a conspiracy that dates back hundreds of years. The signs can no longer be ignored. Watch through the eyes of Noah Parker and his family as a global empire takes shape. Ancient writings are fulfilled, and the last days fall upon the once great United States of America. The Days of Noah, Book 1. Conspiracy by Mark Goodwin is a fast-paced fiction thriller which looks at how modern conspiracies could play into biblical prophecy concerning end times. Buy The Days of Noah in paperback, Kindle, or audio edition at Amazon.com.